Right. So before we jump into today's deep dive, there's a quick but really critical note for you listening right now.
Yeah, especially if you're involved in managing corporate IT or data.
Exactly. I mean, if your organization is currently relying on, you know, proprietary tools from vendors like Microsoft or maybe Google Workspace for email management, well, there is a powerful open source alternative you really need to know about.
Because we are talking about the actual bedrock of your corporate infrastructure here.
Right, things like email retention, data protection, financial records, and audit trails. The legal, regulatory, and compliance requirements for these records are just massive.
Which is exactly why data sovereignty matters so much. You need to actually control your own data.
You really do. And our supporter for this deep dive, SafeServer, handles the hosting of this kind of open source software specifically on German servers.
Which ensures those really strict privacy standards and compliance.
Right. And they advise on implementation. And you can commission them for consulting on this and, you know, comparable solutions. So you can find more information and secure your communication infrastructure by visiting www.safeserver.de.
Which is, honestly, incredibly relevant context for the scenario we're exploring today.
It really is. Because, okay, imagine this. It was a Tuesday morning, and a regulatory auditor just knocks on your office door.
Oh, the absolute worst case scenario.
Right. Or maybe it's opposing counsel in some massive corporate lawsuit, and they hand you a subpoena demanding one specific email correspondence from, like, 3 years ago.
And if you cannot produce that exact email, fully untampered and verified,
your company faces a crippling fine, or you just lose the lawsuit by default. So today, we are taking a deep dive into an open-source email archiving application called Piler.
Yeah, we'll be looking at its official project website and the developer documentation straight from their GitHub repository.
Exactly. We want to understand how organizations prevent that exact nightmare scenario. Our mission today is really to give you an easy, beginner-friendly entry point into what email archiving actually is, why it's so critical, and how Piler tackles this behind the scenes.
It sounds like a super technical domain, I know, but it fundamentally touches on a pain point that literally every single person listening has experienced. Just, you know, on a much more dangerous scale.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all know that feeling of sweating over the search bar, typing in random keywords, just desperately trying to find a specific attachment from 3 months ago.
Right. And now multiply that frustration by 1,000 employees.
Yeah. And add the threat of a regulatory audit. You start to see the massive organizational crisis we're dealing with here.
The scale of the problem is just staggering. Modern organizations are entirely built on the back of email. I mean, it functions as the primary vehicle for communication, file sharing, decision making.
That's basically the corporate memory.
Exactly. It is the corporate memory.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit because the physical equivalent of this is just completely absurd. Imagine a company where, you know, every time someone sends a company-wide memo with a 10-page report attached to it, the mailroom physically prints out 50 copies of that report.
Right, and then they have to go buy 50 new filing cabinets just to store them all.
Exactly. And over the years, they just keep buying more filing cabinets, shoving papers in randomly with no master index whatsoever. Eventually, the building just runs out of floor space.
It's a total nightmare.
And then when someone actually needs to find a crucial contract from, say, 2022, they literally have to physically dig through years of unlabeled junk.
That analogy perfectly illustrates the hidden cost of all this unstructured data. And, you know, the traditional response from an IT perspective to those overflowing filing cabinets was simply to rent another warehouse.
Right. Just throw money at it. Buy more storage.
Exactly. But the documentation we're looking at today emphasizes that modern email archiving is not just about throwing files into a digital void. Piler actually makes a compelling case centered on cost savings and productivity.
Yeah, they cite some pretty crazy numbers.
They do. They specifically note a storage reduction of up to 80%, allowing organizations to handle millions of emails super efficiently.
Okay, wait, let me play this skeptical IT manager for a second here.
Sure, go for it.
Because an 80% reduction, I mean, that sounds great on a marketing brochure, but storage is incredibly cheap nowadays.
Right.
I can go online right now and buy a massive multi-terabyte hard drive for almost nothing. So why do we really need specialized, highly engineered, open source software to do this? Why not just buy a bigger hard drive and keep throwing the digital boxes up in the attic?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the flaw in that approach is that raw storage space is only half the equation. While spinning hard drives might be cheap at the electronics store, Managing unstructured, bloated data across an entire enterprise network is incredibly expensive.
Because of the processing power.
Exactly. It slows down your primary servers. It means your nightly data backups take, 3 days instead of 3 hours. And most importantly, it drains human time.
Oh.
Like, a bigger hard drive does not help an auditor find a needle in a haystack. It just provides a much larger haystack.
Right, yeah.
The true value here is handling millions of emails efficiently and retrieving any single one of them in milliseconds. That is a massive productivity boost that raw storage simply cannot provide.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting, because I want to know the mechanics of how it actually shrinks that haystack down.
Yeah, the under-the-hood stuff.
Exactly. Mm. Because if I am backing up terabytes of data to a cloud provider, I'm paying for every single gigabyte. Mm. So how does Pylor physically achieve that 80% reduction? Going back to my mailroom analogy, if HR sends out a 10-megabyte PDF of the new employee handbook to a company of 50 people,
yeah,
without an archiving system, the Exchange server is essentially saving 50 separate copies of that exact same 10-megabyte PDF.
Right, which consumes 500 megabytes of really expensive Tier 1 server space for a single document. It's just needlessly duplicated.
Wow, yeah.
And this is where Pylor's technical features, which are detailed really nicely in their GitHub repository, come into play through a mechanism called message and attachment deduplication.
Deduplication, meaning it just removes the duplicates entirely.
Basically, yeah. It intercepts the bloat.
Yeah.
So when that company-wide email hits the system, Pylor's engine scans it and recognizes that the 10-megabyte PDF attachment being sent to employee A is mathematically identical to the one going to employee B, employee C, and so on.
Oh, that's smart.
Right. So instead of writing 50 copies to the disk, the software saves the attachment exactly one time in the archive.
Just once.
And then, for the other 49 emails, it creates a tiny internal reference pointer.
Okay.
It essentially leaves a sticky note saying, hey, if this user clicks on their attachment, just go fetch that single master copy we already saved.
Okay. I love this. It is like a university library buying one single copy of a massive, heavy textbook and just giving all the students a library card with the exact shelf location, rather than printing 50 heavy textbooks for everyone to carry around in their backpack.
So that perfectly captures the mechanism, yeah. And the software actually goes a step further than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the GitHub documentation highlights message compression. So once it strips out all the redundant duplicate files, it takes the remaining unique data and compresses it, squeezing the digital footprint even tighter.
Wow, so it's a two-step process.
Exactly. The combination of deduplication and compression is the actual engine driving that massive drop in storage costs.
Okay, so the data is packed away tightly and really efficiently.
Right.
But going back to your point about the auditor looking for the needle in the haystack,
right,
how do we actually find anything in a compressed, deduplicated archive of millions of emails?
Well, Pylor builds a highly optimized index, which enables what they call full text search. And this is a really crucial distinction here.
Yes, sir.
It's not just looking at the subject line or the sender's email address. The engine is actively reading and indexing the actual body content of the emails, and crucially, the text buried within the attachments themselves.
Wait, really? So if a lawyer is looking for a specific phrase buried on like page 42 of a PDF contract that was attached to an email 3 years ago?
Yes.
The system has already read and cataloged that exact phrase.
Exactly. The documentation points out that users can choose between a simple search for those quick everyday queries and an expert search for highly specific granular parameters.
Okay, so I imagine expert search is where you build the really complex filters. Like, find me an email from John sent between March and May of 2021 containing a PDF attachment where the body of the email mentions the word budget.
Spot on. And once an administrator or a legal team builds those complex queries, Pylor allows them to save those search criteria.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So they don't have to rebuild them from scratch for the next quarterly audit. They can just run it again.
That's a huge time saver.
And users can also actively tag emails to categorize them dynamically within the archive itself. Technically speaking, it's highly flexible with how it ingests this data, too.
What do you mean by flexible?
Well, it supports recognized industry standards like EML, MailDir, and standard mailbox formats,
okay,
which are essentially just the universally accepted packaging formats for email data across, different server types.
Got it. So what does this all mean?
Right.
We have this incredibly efficient engine. We've taken millions of messy corporate emails, shrunk them down, and made them searchable in a fraction of a second.
Right.
But to me, this efficiency introduces a totally different, much more dangerous problem.
I think I know where you're going with this. You're thinking about the security implications of fast access.
Exactly. Mm. If an organization is being audited by a regulator, how does the investigator know that this easily accessible, highly searchable archive hasn't been messed with?
Right, because it's almost too easy to access.
Yeah. If it's so easy for a system administrator to pull up an email from 3 years ago, what stops an employee who is, say, about to be fired from just going in, finding an old email, and quietly deleting it? Or worse, altering the text of a contract to cover their tracks?
You've hit on the main vulnerability of literally any centralized database, and the developers absolutely anticipated this.
Okay, good.
Yeah. What's fascinating here is that once you solve the storage and search problem, the immediate next hurdle is verifiable compliance. Fast search leads directly to the need for strict, undeniable security.
Right.
So the pilot project highlights some heavy-hitting compliance features specifically designed to answer your concern, starting with tamper-evident email archiving.
Tamper-evident. So like the digital equivalent of a wax seal on an envelope.
Exactly.
If someone tries to pry it open and change the letter, the seal shatters, and everyone knows the document was compromised.
That's a perfect way to picture it. The underlying technology there is cryptographic hashing. Pilar applies digital fingerprinting and verification to the emails.
Okay, how does that work in practice?
Well, when an email enters the archive, the system runs its exact contents through a complex mathematical algorithm to generate a unique string of characters, a digital fingerprint.
Wait, so if I go into an archived contract and I somehow manage to bypass the security, and I just change a single comma or add a single zero to a dollar amount,
the entire fingerprint changes instantly.
Really? Just from one comma?
Yes. The algorithm produces a completely different string of characters, and the system runs routine checks, sees that the current fingerprint no longer matches the original one stored in the database, and instantly flags the record as tampered.
Wow.
There is literally no way to alter the document without breaking that mathematical seal.
I mean, that has to be a massive relief for any compliance officer or corporate lawyer listening right now.
Oh, absolutely.
It provides mathematical proof that the email they are handing to a judge is the exact email that was sent 3 years ago.
It forms the absolute bedrock of digital trust in legal proceedings. And beyond just tampering, the system enforces automated retention rules.
Okay, what does that cover?
Well, different industries have completely different legal requirements for how long they must keep records, right? Like, a healthcare provider might need to keep patient correspondence for 10 years.
Sure.
While a standard retail business might only need to keep general inquiries for 1 year.
Makes sense.
So Peeler automates this life cycle, ensuring emails simply cannot be deleted before that mandatory period expires.
Great.
But equally important, it ensures they are disposed of properly when the time comes.
Right, to comply with data minimization principles so the company isn't holding on to liabilities they just no longer need.
Exactly.
But what about when a company is actively involved in a lawsuit? I mean, you can't just let the automated retention system delete emails that might be evidence, even if they hit their 7-year expiration date tomorrow.
Right. That would be destroying evidence.
Exactly.
The software actually addresses that specific scenario with a feature called legal hold.
Legal hold.
Yep. If litigation is pending, administrators can place a legal hold on specific users, departments, or even just keyword topics.
Oh, wow.
It acts as a freeze frame. It completely overrides all standard retention and automated deletion rules, locking the data in place until the legal matter is officially resolved and the hold is manually lifted.
Okay, so the data is cryptographically verified, it is locked down by retention rules, and it can be frozen for lawsuits.
Yeah.
That covers internal tampering and compliance perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But what about external threats? Like if someone hacks into the server or literally walks into the data center and physically steals the hard drives.
It's a valid concern. The technical security measures detailed in the GitHub repository are really robust here. It utilizes message encryption to protect data at rest.
Okay, so meaning?
Meaning that even if a thief stole the physical hard drives, the data would appear as completely unreadable gibberish without the specific decryption keys.
Got it.
And for data moving across the network, it supports StartTLS, which basically secures the connection between the email servers and the archive, preventing anyone from intercepting the emails in transit.
Okay, and what about access control? how do we ensure only authorized personnel are logging into this vault in the first place?
Well, the platform features extensive access controls and explicitly supports Google Authenticator for two-factor authentication.
Oh, nice.
Which is crucial, right? Because even if an administrator's password is stolen in a phishing attack, the attacker still cannot access the archive without the physical secondary device.
Right.
But honestly, perhaps the most vital compliance feature for oversight is the comprehensive audit log.
Ah, I love a good audit log.
Right. Everything anyone does in the system, every search query executed, every document exported, every single login attempt is meticulously recorded.
So there are no secrets.
None. And you can even perform searches within the audit logs themselves to track exactly who looked at what specific file and at what exact time.
See, it truly functions as a digital fortress, which honestly brings me to a very practical, everyday concern.
Okay, what's that?
A system this secure, this lockdown, with cryptographic fingerprints and immutable audit logs. It sounds incredibly imposing.
Yeah, it sounds intense.
It sounds like an isolated bunker.
So what is the actual user reality here? Does implementing an open source tool like Pilar mean an IT department has to completely rip out their current email system, tell everyone to stop using their current apps, and force them to work inside this bunker?
Honestly, no. Because a successful archiving system has to be a silent partner to your active email environment.
Hmm?
If it creates friction for the daily user, it just becomes a huge liability.
So the documentation makes it really clear that Pilar is highly adaptable and designed to integrate seamlessly. It features a built-in SMTP server.
Okay, and for the non-IT folks, what does that mean?
It means it can directly receive a copy of every single incoming and outgoing email right at the transport layer before the message even reaches the user's inbox.
Oh, so the end user doesn't even know the archiving process is happening.
Exactly.
They just send and receive emails normally in their usual app, and a copy gets instantly and silently routed into the Pilar archive in the background.
The process is entirely invisible to the user. And for environments that are already deeply invested in major tech ecosystems, Pilar explicitly lists support for both Google Apps and Office 365 integration.
Oh, that's huge.
It's built to play nice with the tools organizations are already paying for. It handles standard IMAP and POP3 as well. Furthermore, when it comes to user logins, administrators do not have to create and manage a whole new set of passwords for the archive.
My goodness.
Yeah, Pilar handles Active Directory and LDAP authentication.
Okay, let's break that down for a second for everyone. Active Directory and LDAP are essentially the digital phone books and ID badges a company already uses, right?
Yeah, they are the central directories that manage who works at the company and what their password is. And because Pilar taps directly into that existing directory, it supports single sign-on, or SSO.
Which means employees can just use their everyday company login to access the archive if they ever need to search for a lost message.
Exactly.
That removes a massive layer of friction for IT departments. I mean, you don't have to field hundreds of, hey, I forgot my archive password support tickets because they're just using their normal computer password.
Right. The administrative overhead is kept to an absolute minimum. Now, for the tech-curious listeners out there, peering behind the curtain into the GitHub repository reveals some really fascinating details about its open-source architecture.
Well, let's hear it.
A look at the codebase breakdown shows it is primarily written in PHP, which makes up about 80.1% of the code, and C, making up roughly 10.9%.
Okay, which makes perfect sense from a structural standpoint.
Right.
I mean, PHP is likely powering the web-based user interface, right? Mm. Making it accessible through a standard browser.
Yeah.
While the C code is handling all the heavy lifting under the hood, things like the cryptographic hashing, the data compression, and that intense full-text indexing.
Yeah, the processes where raw computational speed is absolutely critical.
Right.
The architecture is deliberately optimized for performance. The repository also notes that the software includes I18, which stands for internationalization,
okay,
allowing the interface to be adapted for completely different languages and global regions. It also features a customizable theme.
Oh, nice.
So an organization can brand the portal with their own corporate logos and color schemes, making it feel like an internal company tool rather than, you know, a third-party software.
It is those little touches that elevate an open source project from a hobbyist script into a really polished, enterprise-ready product.
Definitely.
But let me push back on the reality of open source for just a moment here. Because usually installing open source server software means an IT team is going to spend 3 days locked in a server room, resolving dependency nightmares, fixing broken libraries, and just generally pulling their hair out.
It can be rough, yeah.
So is deploying Pyler going to be a massive headache for a system administrator?
Well, the deployment process detailed in the repository actually shows a very modern, elegant solution to that exact problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For developers or system administrators looking to install this, the GitHub page provides a streamlined process for building a deb package. That's a Debian software package specifically tailored for Ubuntu 24.04 LTS.
Okay.
And they solve the whole dependency nightmare by using Docker.
Docker. Think of Docker like a standardized shipping container or a foolproof recipe box, for those who don't know. Instead of manually configuring every single ingredient on the server, you just run the container.
Exactly. The developer simply clones the repository and runs a single specific Docker command.
Just one command.
Just one. The command uses a pre-configured builder image, passing in necessary parameters like the project ID and the distribution codename like Noble for Ubuntu 24.04.
Wow.
And the beauty of this approach is that the build process happens entirely inside that isolated Docker container.
Which guarantees that no matter who runs that command or what weird settings they might have on their personal machine, they get the exact same compiled package at the end.
Yes.
It is perfectly reproducible. And from a security standpoint, I mean, reproducible builds are huge.
Absolutely massive.
You know exactly what code is running, which protects the organization against supply chain attacks, where malicious code gets slipped into the installation process.
Right, and the documentation points out this works reliably for any code branch, not just the master branch.
That's great.
It really demonstrates a highly professional workflow that reflects a deep understanding of modern infrastructure and security practices.
It really is amazing to step back and look at the whole picture here. We started this deep dive talking about a massive organizational liability, a digital mailroom just overflowing with unlabeled, unsearchable boxes of data.
Yeah, a total mess.
And we've seen how a single open source application can step in and transform that chaos into a perfectly structured, deeply secure, and legally compliant archive.
It's quite the transformation.
It uses deduplication and compression to save massive amounts of expensive server space. It indexes every single word so an auditor can find a needle in a haystack in milliseconds. And it locks everything down with cryptographic hashing and unalterable audit logs to ensure total verified compliance.
It effectively bridges the gap between the messy, unstructured reality of daily human communication and the incredibly strict, unforgiving demands of regulatory compliance.
Right.
And it manages to do all of that without disrupting the end user's workflow at all.
Which brings us perfectly back to the practical realities of deploying a system like this. Because before we wrap up, I want to return to our supporter, SafeServer. We've spent the last few minutes exploring exactly what organizations, whether you are a major corporation, a healthcare association, or a nonprofit stand to gain by replacing proprietary vendor tools with an open source solution like Pyler. You gain incredible cost savings on storage, you secure bulletproof regulatory compliance, and you reclaim thousands of hours of lost productivity.
But the software just provides the mechanism, right? Running that mechanism securely and reliably in the real world is the other half of the battle.
Exactly. And that is precisely why professionally managed hosting often makes infinitely more sense than an IT department trying to operate this entirely on their own. When an organization partners with a service like SafeServer, they're securing guaranteed uptime and proper expert configuration right from day one.
Yeah.
And more importantly, they gain the ultimate security of having their critical data hosted on strictly regulated German servers. As we discussed earlier, data sovereignty isn't just a corporate buzzword.
No, it's a vital legal shield for your communications.
So SafeServer is available right now for consulting on implementing this specific archiving software and similar open source alternatives, perfectly tailored to your compliance needs. You can take control of your corporate data today by visiting www.safeserver.de.
Honestly, the peace of mind that comes from knowing your entire communication history is instantly accessible to your legal team, yet mathematically protected from tampering and external threats, it's simply invaluable for any modern organization.
It changes the entire risk profile of a company.
Yeah.
And it leaves me with one final, slightly provocative thought for you to ponder today.
Oh, okay. Let's hear it.
We've spent this entire deep dive exploring how tools like Pyler ensure that every single email sent in a professional setting is perfectly captured.
Yeah.
It's deeply searchable in seconds, it is cryptographically tamper-proof, and it is stored essentially forever.
Right.
So, knowing that,
mm-hmm.
knowing that the digital wax seal is permanent,
mm-hmm.
how might that change the fundamental way you choose your words the next time you sit down to draft a quick email?
Wow. Yeah, think about that.
Think about that. Until next time, keep exploring.